Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I am your host for today, Susan Franz, and I was hoping to be able to welcome back my co-host, Paul Wearson, but he's iced in on his farm and has flu symptoms. I know a lot of you listeners have had one or both of these conditions this winter, so my sympathy to you, too. And I know how much your family and co-workers have missed you. But I have a good assortment of topics for you, even without the benefit of Paul's interview skills. We're starting with a bill before the Iowa Senate. Pam Mackey-Taylor of the Sierra Club is with us with a warning about SF-2311. It's pretty complicated, though, so I'm glad to have someone who has studied it to talk about it. The rest of the show is about entertainment, to appeal to a wide variety of tastes. The two young artists who will be performing with the Central Iowa Symphony this first weekend in March came into the studio this week to talk about their music and to let us record a little of the concertos they will be playing next week. For a change of pace, we'll hear from Chris Corbin of the Nevada Historical Society introducing the murder dinner to be held at the Dyer Dollhouse in Nevada. And finally, we'll have several people coming in from the Story Theater Company's production of 12 Angry Jurors. Paul has been talking about this all week. I'm so sorry he can't interview them. I know he'll be trying to get to the performance. Here's Pam Mackey-Taylor to tell us what we need to talk to our Iowa senators about SF-2311. And this is something that could have a big impact on our utility bills. Hi, Pam.
Hello.
I noticed in the information you sent me that a lot of this is about energy efficiency plans. What are those?
So when you buy an energy-efficient appliance, you get a rebate. When you buy LED bulbs, you get a rebate. Or have a home energy audit. Those things are covered under the energy efficiency programs.
And what's changed about those? I've certainly used them. It makes a big difference when you're shopping. You say, oh, this is Energy Star. And it says how much money you'll save by buying this appliance.
Indeed. And what the benefit of these programs is that they reduce the need for new coal-fired power plants, new gas plants, and new wind turbines. That keeps your electric rates low, even if you don't participate in the energy-efficient programs.
So what's new? Then why would they change anything?
The utility companies have banded together. They want to eliminate those programs. It costs them money to administer them, even though they're beneficial to the public. It takes time to administer them, and they would rather just not have the programs at all.
So there's a bill that would eliminate the programs? Is that what SF-2311 is about?
Yes, and that and a lot of other things. The utilities want to avoid having users have solar panels on their houses. For example, the bill would allow the utility company to charge somebody who has solar panels more for their electricity than if they didn't have solar panels. The bill would also reduce the role of the utilities board in oversight of the utility companies. And there are a lot of other things that make this look like the wish list for the utility companies.
Well, I'm a little confused about the role of the Iowa Utilities Board. We've heard a lot about that in connection with the Bakken Pipeline. It's only three people. What role have they played in the past with energy companies?
So the Utilities Board is the regulator over the utility companies. There are three kinds of utility companies in Iowa. There are municipal utilities, there are rural electric cooperatives, and there are investor-owned utilities like MidAmerican and Alliant. MidAmerican and Alliant are monopolies. They are required to provide power to the people in their service territories, and they get that at a monopoly level. And so the Utilities Board provides oversight to make sure the consumers are protected, make sure the rates are reasonable, make sure that they're doing things for their customers in providing those services. And so they have a wonderful oversight role. They are able to hold hearings, and the public can participate in those. Companies that can have a seat at the table. And in that review process, experts are brought in. They analyze the rate increases, and they serve as an oversight.
Well, I have a theoretical question about that. Those who were involved in the fight against the Bakken pipeline felt that the hearings that were held on that were just show, because the decision had already been made to go with a company. Why couldn't the big power companies, the investor-owned utilities, have the same kind of influence over the Iowa Utilities Board?
Utilities Board is only as strong as the commissioners that are appointed. There are three people that are appointed by the governor. If the governor does a good job of appointing professionals who know the utility regulation or are willing to participate in the hearings and listen to the material brought forth, you'll get good utility regulation. And it's better than having the legislature allow and dictate policies for something as complex as energy laws. And it's better than having the utilities themselves self-regulate, because with a monopoly, there's no oversight.
But now, you keep talking about the investor-owned utilities as a monopoly. But, of course, many towns like Ames have municipal utilities. And they have don't they run by totally different rules?
They run by a separate set of rules. And they do have some oversight from the Utilities Board, much more limited than the investor-owned utilities.
So, for example, in Ames, which I have to keep mentioning because that's the utility I know best, we potentially have a solar farm. It isn't fully funded yet, but this will be part of our municipal-owned utility when it's finished. And while we have quite restrictive policies on placement of solar panels, we even have some solar panels, if they're approved, feed into the grid, and then people get discounts on their utility bills. This would still be allowed, right?
This would still be allowed. Now, the munis, again, have different rules, and it would be up to the rules that the municipal is operating off of. With the case of the investor-owned, they are going to allow the people who have solar panels be charged more for their electricity that they buy from the utility company than if you didn't have a solar panel. And we believe that's discriminatory.
Well, not only is it discriminatory, but in other states, the utilities have problems because they have to pay too much to the people when they buy back the solar-powered electricity.
Well, we believe rates need to be reasonable. That's why the Utility Board is providing the oversight. And so they analyze the figures that are provided by the utility company. They talk to experts. And they have a full investigation of what rates are, what rates should be set at. And that's why the Utilities Board needs to be strong, and they need to be involved in this.
And they would be completely out of the loop with this new legislation, is that
right? They would be severely restricted in their oversight. So time frames for responding would be reduced. The utility companies could do some automatic rate adjustments without going to the Utilities Board. And so this really gives the monopoly much, much more power at the risk of increasing rates for the consumers.
Is there any federal legislation that is affecting this? I know that I heard a panel, including the investor-owned utilities, somebody from, I think it was Alliant, and they were very, very happy with the subsidies they were getting for wind. There was a big incentive for wind, and I would think that might have been already eliminated if it's not on the wish list. Do you know?
I don't know where we are with some of the federal tax programs, but certainly the federal production tax credits and investment tax credits have driven a lot of energy work in Iowa in terms of wind and some solar. So those programs are important. There also is a Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that affects our transmission lines and how those things are paid for. And so Iowa works in concert with federal law, but we have a lot of responsibility in Iowa to regulate our own utilities.
I know of one town, we talked about this yesterday when I was on the phone with you, Kelowna, that is 100% renewable. And it's hard to imagine how that is possible, even with a big solar array and windmills. Do you know whether there's any move to do that elsewhere?
Bloomfield has a set a goal that they want to be 100% renewable energy. And so it's possible to combine solar energy efficiency and wind with some backup if you need some backup power of gas. But it is possible to move to significantly more renewable energy than we are today.
And then how would these people deal with it? They must have to get some supplementary energy. Would they build huge amounts, or is there a way they could become investor-owned utilities, or what are their options?
The best way for the communities to do that is if they're municipal utilities or rural electric co-ops, because they directly control their own utility. But every community can get involved with allowing solar panels on houses. Individuals can do that. Everybody can become more energy efficient and reduce their use of electricity. And overall, over time, as we buy more energy efficient appliances, we'll use less electricity. And as a society, we need to set our goals to use clean, renewable energy.
And one way or the other, SF2311 will inhibit moving in that direction.
Yes.
Well, I guess I don't know whether everybody has remembered that number, but I guess this is something to be on the lookout for.
Yes.
Well, thank you for coming in, Pam, and explaining all of these intricacies to us, and have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Thank you very much. This is KHOI Community Radio. Aims at Story City and the surrounding area. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen. We just heard from Pam Mackey-Taylor giving us her take on a bill that will affect our energy options for years to come. Our next guests are two young artists who will be performing with the Central Iowa Symphony. The first is Chris Kim, who will be the soloist for the Mozart Violin Concerto No. 4 in D major, Kershaw 218. He will be followed by Joanna Kim, who has chosen the Cello Concerto in E minor, Opus 85 Adagio Moderato by Edward Elgar. They came in yesterday, and it's my great pleasure to introduce them to you.
My name is Chris Kim, and I am 5th grade in Fellows Elementary, and I'm studying with Dr. Sturm, professor at Iowa State University, and the concertmaster in the Des Moines Symphony. And the piece I'm going to play is Mozart, and it's kind of a joyful piece, and I think Mozart composed this this piece like an opera, and like there's two person, and one singing and then the other's like answering what the other person said.
You say it's like an opera. You don't have any vocals with this, though, do you?
Well, you can kind of hear what the other person's saying by listening to the styles of someone's playing. Like, if someone's playing with vigor and, like, strong, then you can see it's like a man and, like, he's talking pretty loud. Like, if it's, like, high-pitched and kind of soft and lively, you can say it's a girl singing with a high-pitched voice.
So you go back and forth.
Yeah.
I suppose that you know that Mozart started playing violin when he was very young also.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know, did he start playing as young as 4 years old?
Yeah.
Was this one of the reasons that you picked Mozart for your piece?
Well, I haven't thought of that, but I chose this piece because I'm going to have an audition back in Korea where I can go to musical middle school. One of the audition songs are one of the Mozart concertos, so that's one of the reasons why I picked Mozart.
Tell us a little about how you started playing the violin.
When I was like 4, I played with a toy violin and it played tunes automatically, and I want to try to play a real violin. And I used to conduct like at the concerts because they wouldn't let young kids in. I heard the music and conducted.
And where was this that you conducted while the orchestra was playing?
It was just outside of the Performing Hall of Seoul Arts Center.
And why were you there if they wouldn't let you in?
Like, my father loves hearing to classical music, and my mom does too. So one of them has to watch me because I can't stay at my house because I was too young, but they wouldn't let me in. So they bought one ticket, and for the first part, my father went in, and during the intermission, they switched spots, and my mom would go in, and my father would watch me.
How did you start taking lessons on a real violin?
I took lessons when I went to kindergarten, and they had like a program for young kids, and I played a 1/16th violin, which is tiny. And I am amazed at someone making that kind of small violin. It's like a miniature violin, like I can't put my fingers on it now.
Now that you're so big.
Yeah.
And you're, how old are you now?
I'm 11 years old.
So you've been playing for a long time. Have you had several violins as you went along?
Yeah. When I was playing 1/16th, after that I went to 1/8, then I went to 1/4, then 1/2, then 3/4, and I changed it to full size last summer.
So you've just been playing for a few months.
Yeah, on a full size violin. It's kind of big for me.
But you'll get bigger.
Yeah.
You'll grow into it. You're going back to Seoul?
Yeah.
And when you go back, you want to go to a musical middle school? Is it a special middle school for music?
Yeah, like other middle schools, they just have instruments just as a talent, but like for especially that middle school, we actually get to learn violin.
So here in Ames and in Des Moines, do you have other opportunities besides the Central Iowa Symphony? And do you play in a school orchestra or anything?
Yeah, I play in the school orchestra, and I participated in the University Northern Iowa Violin Caucus. I am now going to the Des Moines Philharmonic Youth Orchestra.
And what are you be playing there?
I'm assistant concertmaster for the Philharmonic, and I think we're having a concert in about 2 weeks.
Where?
At Drake University.
At Drake.
Cheslow Auditorium.
Drake University. So people who like to hear you at the Central Iowa Symphony on Sunday, March 4th at 3 p.m., if they hear you and they'd want to hear you again, they can go to Cheslow Auditorium. What's been the most fun for you in playing violin?
I like to play exciting pieces.
Is the Mozart Concerto an exciting piece?
I think so.
Do you like to practice?
Not really, but I like to practice the songs I like, which is the Mozart Violin Concerto.
So you enjoy competition?
I like the feeling when I leave the audition hall, like, proud of myself.
But do you know then whether you have been selected when you are feeling proud of yourself, or you just feel proud of yourself because you know you did well?
I just feel proud of myself because I know I did well.
Thank you. And did you feel proud of yourself when you played the introduction just a little while ago?
Yeah.
Good. Well, thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.
Real pleasure to talk to you. I'm here with Joanna Kim, who is the second of our guests who are young artists in the Young Artists Concert with the Central Iowa Symphony. And Joanna, you have the same last name as Chris Kim, but not only are you not related, but you have very different stories. He came to the United States only in 2016, and he'll be leaving next year to enter a music middle school in Seoul. You, I guess, were actually born in the United States. Is that right? Where?
Yes. I was born in Berkeley, which is in Northern California. And when I was six, I moved to Davis, California. And I lived there for about 10 years. And then I just moved to Iowa last fall.
So when did you start music?
I started when I was about 6 years old. I started on the piano and violin, actually. And I didn't know what a cello really was until I heard one of my friends playing cello at a concert. And I just fell in love with the sound. And I was just like, I need to play this instrument. So I asked my parents if I could play. And I soon began lessons after that. And so I started cello when I was about 9 years old.
Were you able to play a full-size cello at that time?
No, I started on a half-size cello. So.
Did you go directly from the half-size to the full-size cello?
No, I went from a half-size cello to a three-quarter-size cello to a 7/8-size cello and then to a full-size cello.
So. And are you going to grow any more so that you...
Hopefully not.
Once you started playing the full-size cello, what opportunities did you have to play with other musicians or orchestras?
Mm-hmm. I played in my elementary school orchestra first, and then after that I played in my middle school orchestra, and then I also joined the Sacramento Youth Orchestra, where we met once a week, and then we played different pieces, and I played with them for about 2 years, and then I went on to play with the UC Davis Symphony Orchestra for my freshman and sophomore years in high school.
And did you do anything beyond the school orchestras?
I played with the California All-States since 7th grade, which is where every year we musicians across the state come and play together. And it's really fun playing with musicians who are so talented and dedicated about their art, and it's really inspiring. And we all love music, and so we bond over that. And it's also fun playing with the conductors because they're different every year. And each conductor gives us different lessons about life and about music. And it's really fun.
So when is the last time you played in the California All-State?
I played last year in my 10th grade year. And then actually when I moved to Iowa, I played with the Iowa All-State, which was in the same year. So technically I played two All-States in the same year.
Well, is there very much difference between the California All-State and the Iowa All-State?
Yes, they're very different. First of all, the audition itself is very different. In California, you have to record yourself playing an excerpt and send it in, and you have to wait like a month or two before you actually get the results. And then in Iowa, you actually have to go to a building and like physically play for the judges. So it's a little bit more nerve-wracking, I guess. And the musicians are actually really different too. In California, it's primarily Asian. Like every year, it's like 90% Asian. And in Iowa, there's a little bit more diversity.
I would imagine quite a bit more if Asian is your standard.
Right.
After you came to Ames, you had a new teacher?
Yes. I started taking lessons from George Work, who is a cello professor at Iowa State University.
And did you find any youth orchestras to play with?
Yes, I'm actually playing with the Des Moines Youth Orchestra, and we have rehearsals every Monday, and it's really fun because I like the music we're playing, and there's a lot of talented musicians in the orchestra who really inspire me to practice more. And we actually have a concert tomorrow where we're playing Star Wars, and we're playing Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony.
And where are you playing?
I'm playing at the Drake University, Schesl Auditorium.
Is there another orchestra?
A chamber orchestra, which is like a smaller orchestra. There's only about like 10 people in the orchestra. And it's at ISU, and it's called Cyclone Strings.
How did you learn about the Young Artists concert with Central Iowa Symphony?
Well, when I first came to Iowa, I was looking for different competitions to try out for because I was playing the Elgar and I was ready to perform it. So I searched it up online, and then the Central Iowa Symphony came up, so I thought it would be a great opportunity.
You'll be playing that then on Sunday, March 3rd at 3 p.m. in the Ames City Auditorium. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames and the surrounding area. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, introducing you to the two young artists who will be playing concertos with the Central Iowa Symphony. The music you heard was from the selections they will play at the concert recorded in our studio. It was quite a thrill for me to watch these young musicians get out their instruments and be recorded in our studio. And now it's time to hear from Chris Corbin in Nevada. So I'm here with Chris Corbin of the Nevada Historical Society, who has a very special entertainment for us. Why don't you tell us a little about what's coming up,
Chris? Well, we're going to be hosting here on February 24th and March 3rd. We have what's called the Murder Mystery Dinner. It's kind of like Clue, is the best way to put it. We have people come to have a dinner with us, and then we have people from the audience, they play certain parts. And this murder that we're having this coming up is called Murder in the Caribbean. And there are seven people who play different parts. There's three women and three men, and then we have one that's gender neutral. It doesn't matter which one. They don't really know what they're going to do, but they have little parts they have to play. They get a little information about who they're going to represent. They don't really know their entire parts. Matter of fact, they don't even know who actually the murderer is.
Well, of course, that would spoil it, wouldn't it?
Well, especially if they knew and they could give it away quick. Yes, so we don't allow that to happen. They are pretty much told what their individual is like, what kind of dress they may want to wear, what kind of actions they want to play for that person's part. And then when we're ready to start, we give them a booklet. And then they have a before meal. We have cocktails starting at 5:30. Then we'll start the first round and second round, and then we'll go to a break, and then we'll have a meal, and then we'll take another break, and then we'll come back, and then we'll take a break and go to have dessert, and then we'll come back and finish up.
And you say you actually sold out of a couple of the nights already.
The third right now is pretty much sold out. We have one opening for a male part, but if no one comes, then I'll play that part. I'd rather not. But on the 24th of February, we still have three openings for parts, and we do have people just come to watch, and we still have two openings in that.
You really would like to have as many people come and watch as possible, right?
The more, the merrier. And matter of fact, even if they do call me and we'll put them up for next year, this is our eighth consecutive year of doing this.
Well, for this one, it sounds like it's a great getaway. You're not flying people down to the Caribbean for the evening.
No, like I said, we're trying to get a fundraiser here. So instead of paying all that money out to fly you down there, we're going to have it at one of our locations. And our location we're going to have this at is the Dyer Dow Home there in Nevada. It's at 922 5th Street. It's right across from the administrative building and right next to the Presbyterian Church there in Nevada. We've had it there for the last 8 years.
So. And that's large enough to have a lot of onlookers, too?
It's large enough that the largest group we can have in there is 22 people. And like I said, for the third, we have our 22 people already. But the third, we still got a little room left. We have set up in different rooms that for different setups for tables for meals. The meal this year will be roasted chicken, mashed potatoes, and gravy, and probably some green beans. And then dessert, we're planning on having apple pie and ice cream.
The dinner takes place in different rooms, but does the action for the mystery take place in different rooms?
We have a center room, one of the living rooms there at the Dyer Dow House. We're going to set up just for the parts. Well, the people that are reading their parts or doing their parts will be up in the front, and then we'll have chairs set back for people to actually watch. It's a little crowded, but it does work.
So one of the people who is assigned a part is the murderer, right?
Yeah.
So you don't know whether you're the murderer or the murdered.
You're right. You don't know until the end.
Well, you mustn't.
It'll come up at the end. The last part of it says, you are the murderer. So you need to tell the truth and everything else.
But what about the victim?
Well, the victim never shows up, so we don't worry.
Oh, I see. So you don't have a person who's cheated from the beginning.
No, the victim is, it's when you start it, they tell you this person has died. Supposedly, it's about this Charles Miles. He's a music tycoon, and supposedly he gets pushed off his boat, and he's murdered. So, and then the different characters that are there, and a lot of them deal with like a pop diva, and we have old country western singer, and we've got someone that was on American Idol, and those are the characters that are playing.
So they're fun characters to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very much so. We also have one's a wife of the dead person, and one is a brother of the dead person. So, you know, and it
really glamorous people.
Yes, very glamorous and a little quirky.
A great combination.
Yep.
Beautiful people with with wrinkles.
Well, some are wrinkles and some don't have wrinkles. We got, like I said, we got a couple that are that just won the American Idol and that kind of stuff. So it takes the gamut of age.
Oh, yeah. Age and quirkiness.
Yes, age and quirkiness. Well, and you're talking that kind of people anyway. They're all quirky anyway, so.
So it should be a fun time at the Dyer House. What is this?
Dyer Dow.
It should be a fun time at the Dyer Dow House. When is this again?
All right. It'll be February 24th. We'll start at 5:30. And usually we get done about 10. So it's a pretty long evening, but it's very enjoyable. The other date is March 3rd. And like I said before, March 3rd, we only need one part for. That's a male part. And for the 24th, we still have about three parts that are open. One male, one female, and one that's gender. Either way, and then we have a couple openings for people who just like to visit.
So you just have two performances, but two weekends.
Yeah, two weekends.
This is KHOI Community Radio, turning from murder mystery to a murder trial, as we hear from Lori Sulzberger and Travis Cooper. Lori is the managing director, and Travis is an actor and the set designer. And they're from Story Theater Company. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning to both of you, and welcome to KHOI. Why did you decide to do the 12 Angry Jurors this year?
Well, this is our teen production. Story Theater Company is a children's theater here in Ames, and most of our productions are usually fairy tales or stories from classical theater like Charlotte's Web or Disney musicals. But 5 years ago, we decided that our teens needed a challenge, and so we seek out each year a play that will challenge them in their acting and really promote their skills. And so 12 Angry Jurors was a perfect choice for us. 12 really excellent roles. They are on stage the entire time. They can really work on their realism as far as acting, and they have certainly risen to the challenge we've given them.
Well, one of the questions that Paul Wierson had when we were discussing the possible his possible interview of you was, how can you do this with such young actors? And also, he'd seen the long ago movie 12 Angry Men, and he wondered how they could have rewritten the roles, some of them for women.
So, yes, this is based on the teleplay from the 1950s of 12 Angry Men by Reginald Rose. And then they adapted it in the 80s as 12 Angry Women. And now these days, it generally is done as a mixed gender, 12 Angry Jurors. We have kept the time period because some of the dialogue and some of the things like the death penalty being on the table and other things don't really translate to today. But basically all we've changed are the genders. There are a few minor script adaptations that are made, which the publisher allows for making a mixed gender cast. And it works pretty well. As far as the actors being younger, maybe Travis can talk about that and how that's worked out.
Yeah, the actors are – the teen show is always a lot of fun because you do get to mix with a lot of people when you're doing a regular show. You get people that are a lot younger than you and a lot of people that are a lot older than you. But when you get into the teen show, it's a lot of people that are your age and up, which is a lot of fun.
Well, not very far up, though. What is the age range of the actors?
About 13 to 18.
And 13 would, I think, be really challenging.
I started teen show when I was 13, and that was a lot of fun to experience. You're thrown in the whole process all at once, and you just get to see how it's done. So it was a lot of fun to be a part of.
What was your first play?
I was in Almost Maine. It was my first teen show.
That's really funny because I just saw Almost Maine last weekend at the Ankeny Community Theater.
Yes, it's down in Ankeny with an entirely different age range.
Yes,
in
age
the cast.
Range, right. And some of them would be a little hard to do, like coming back after 30 years. And yeah, but
yes. I would say much of the credit goes to our director, Vivian M. Cook. She is a senior performing arts major at Iowa State University, and she really pushes the performers to a level of excellence that I just think people will be amazed to see these young performers grappling with the themes that are in the show and their characterization. Every actor was required to complete a pretty thorough character analysis for their character. They know these people backwards and forwards at this point, not just what you see on stage.
You said that this was also kept for the time, which I believe was the 50s?
Yes, the
original
50s.
Play was mm-hmm. in the 50s. And although I don't remember it well, I saw it when it was a first-run movie. And I know, you know, thinking back on that time, there were a lot of attitudes that have changed for a lot of people, or did you find that was not the case?
That is very much the case. We all come in and we have tactics, so we all know what we want. A lot of people are tired. It's been a long week. They just want to get in, say he's guilty, and get out. And a lot of people want to actually look at the evidence and see what's what. And so tactics change throughout. You decide you want different things from different people. And it's very interesting, this play especially, because you're all on stage all at once. And it's 12 very different people coming together, and they all have their own backgrounds and their own personalities. And you just get to see that all clash on stage, which I find a lot of fun.
As I recall, the motive behind all of the dynamics, besides the time, it has to do with racial prejudice.
Yes.
And so how is this handled? A person was Hispanic in the original play. Do you have a Hispanic person? Of course, the accused is never on stage because you're all in the jury room.
Right.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes. So the accused is never seen and never talked about as far as specifics other than being from a lower class and also low income. The slums are what they are referring to. So it really is left open to a lot of interpretation as to who they're talking about. We certainly have one of the jurors who's very prejudiced and bigoted. We have other jurors that are questioning immigrants. And so there are a lot of things that really surprisingly are still in the news today under different contexts, under different lens, but things we're still talking about today. It's very timely, surprisingly so to me. I was surprised as the show unfolded and they discovered their characters, and Vivian took them through this process. They really discovered a lot that was relevant today that, you know, we're still talking about since the 1950s.
Well, Travis, I'd like to hear a little more about your feelings about the play. And what character do you play?
I am juror number 2, if that tells you anything.
Well, you've done a character analysis. What kind of person are you?
Well, my character description, what it says in the script, is that I am generally swayed. My opinion is easily swayed by others. If I see somebody doing a certain thing, like there's a point in the play, I see somebody wiping their glasses, so I take off my glasses and I wipe my glasses. So I'm easily swayed by other people, and that affects my staging a lot.
Do you enjoy doing this character?
It's a lot of fun. It's also very interesting. While everybody else has very strong opinions, and my only goal is to make everybody like me.
Well, there are lots of people like that around.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a very true to life character.
And so the character that was played, the character who is the no vote in the first round, is that played by a man or a woman?
That is being played by a woman in our play, and you talked about the young actors, the 13-year-olds. That role was actually won by one of our youngest actresses. She's doing a tremendous job. It's played by Libby Jens, and she is amazing. And you would not know when they are out on stage that she's one of the younger actresses out there.
Well, it sounds like a very interesting play. Now, there are a couple things that have nothing to do with the quality of the production that I really need to mention, especially since Paul keeps asking me, where is this play? Where on Dayton Road?
A lot of people do get lost. I got lost my first time trying to go to Dayton.
It only takes once, and then you know where you are. Yes, often we do perform at the Ames City Auditorium. That is not where this production is. Our teen show is always done in a more intimate setting. So it's at our Black Box Theater. It's 615 South Dayton Road. And so basically, Dayton runs between Highway 30 and 13th Street. If you get to either one of those, you've gone too far. So it's not too difficult. Actually, I don't think it's difficult to find, but most people look at that address and think, where is that? Well, there's a theater out there.
So yes, what is it close to? So when you see, we're just past.
Well, if you're heading south, you'll go by MediaCom, is that right? It'll be on your right. And if you get to Tyson's, you've gone too far. Turn around and go back. So if you're heading north from Highway 30, you'll see Tyson's on the left, and we'll be really close right after that.
Okay.
So the weather may be playing some havoc with us this weekend. I've been looking nervously at the weather forecast. If we find we need to cancel a show, we're really hoping not to. Watch our social media and our website, and we'll try to get that information out. Maybe give you guys a call
The other thing is tickets, because I noticed that we can't say prices on the air, but I did notice that they go up. It said after the 21st. Does that mean that it's already too late to get the lower price ticket?
It is not too late, but today is the day. So they can go online to storytheatercompany.org and purchase their tickets in advance. We also have limited seating there, so we do advise that they do that. The door prices are slightly more at the door, so they can appreciate a savings for the adult tickets in advance. The student prices stay the same.
And I would imagine that we've had so many sold-out shows recently, and I've noticed in central Iowa, that I think getting the tickets ahead of time so you get one at all is pretty important.
We would recommend that. We should have a few seats available at the door, so we do recommend that people go ahead and stop by if they haven't managed to get them ahead of time. But they can hop online and get those at any time.
Thank you so much for looking forward to your production.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for today, Susan Branson. Other voices you heard were Pam Mackey-Taylor, Chris Kim, Joanna Kim, Chris Corbin, Lori Sulzberger, and Travis Cooper. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. That is khoifm.org. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your newsfeed. Local Talk was engineered by Jackie Norman. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was the introduction to the Allegro of Violin Concerto No. 4 in D major, Kirschel 218 by Mozart, played by Chris Kim, and cello concert in E minor, Opus 85, Adagio Moderato by Edward Elgar, played by Joanna Kim. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership. Just look for the yellow donate button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and See you again on the radio.